Hello everyone, Pastor Ed here. Just this week, I was reminded yet again that following Jesus is a process of growth that never stops. So I was in my daily reading time where I read the Bible, and I sensed one morning God prompting me about a sin that I had committed 15 years ago. So in short, what I had done was complained about another leader and their leadership. Now the Bible calls that slander, but that's just much too convicting for me to ever refer to that about myself. So we'll just call it me complaining about another leader. Well, I knew I'd done wrong, and I should have gone to him and confessed and asked for his forgiveness, but I just didn't have the courage to do it, and I figured he'll never hear about it, and so I just buried it. Over the last 15 years, every once in a while, that sin would claw its way back up to my consciousness. I would feel guilty about it, I'd justify it, but then I'd push it back down and go on. Well, this week, it came up yet again, and this time I thought, well, why am I so afraid of this sin? Why am I so afraid to go and make contact with that leader and confess to them what I did and ask for their mercy, ask for their forgiveness? I realized I didn't want to be humiliated. I was afraid of how I would feel, how I would look to them. They might even take that sin and tell other people what I did, and I'd be humiliated, which is, right, pride. And I was just afraid of what they may do and how they may respond. Maybe they won't respond with mercy. And so pride and fear is what I listened to rather than God. And so this time I said, no, I want to do hunger and thirst for righteousness. So I'm going to do what makes right relationship with God. This is what he would want me to do. So I contact that leader. And of course, because he's a godly man, he was, oh, absolutely, I forgive you. And I was released, because of the mercy of that leader to me, I was released from the guilt and the weight of a sin that I'd carried for no reason at all, I had carried for 15 years. Now, all of us want mercy. All of us need mercy. Just think about our lives. Just think about your life. Think about that sin, that failure that you keep going back to and makes you feel so bad and makes you feel so guilty. You know, the screen that you said, I'll never look at again, but you look at again. The words that you use, those words of curses on other people. You go, I don't want to speak like that, and then you speak like that. The way that you let anger blow up. I don't want to do this anymore. And yet you blow up yet again. The betrayal that you may have done to somebody, the lying from people, the stealing, and the gossip. And you go, I don't want to do that. And yet you go back and do it. And you know how you feel. After doing that so many times, you feel like God could never forgive me for this. And I wonder if I've sinned my way out of God's mercy. And we long for mercy that will release us from the weight and the guilt of her sin. Or how about those sins that maybe you haven't been repeating, but you've done in the past, and you're so ashamed of them, so afraid of them, that somebody would find out about them. That betrayal you did to that friend that just ruined that relationship. And you go, what was I thinking? Why would I do that? The way that you stole from the company that you were serving for, and you're like, why did I ever do that? And it makes you feel so low, so humiliated. Maybe it was the infidelity, that act of infidelity that you participated in. Or maybe you hurt somebody, or you lied about somebody, or you abused somebody. And you're thinking, oh, I hope nobody ever finds out about that. And every time it comes up in your mind, there's this weight and this sense of failure, and you long for mercy to release you from that. Or maybe reverse, you were the one that was done to. You were the one that was betrayed. You were the one that was abused. You were the one that was treated unfaithfully. And that has that sin against you has changed your life, and you've not been able to let it go, and you long for that release, that freedom, that mercy that will get you out of the downward spiral that you're in. You know, this desire for mercy is a universal thing. People everywhere of all times have always wanted and needed mercy. I mean, if we go back 3,000 years to a writer in the Old Testament, the first portion of the Bible, in the book of Psalms, He says, answer me when I call to you, my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I'm faint. Heal me. Lord, my bones are in agony. Talk about the depth of the weight of what he was struggling with. My soul is in deep anguish. How long, Lord, how long? Have mercy on me, Lord. See, the cry for mercy is universal. All people, all times, all places. We all need mercy because of actions done by us or to us. And Jesus, in the Beatitudes, speaks to this very thing. He says in verse 7 of Matthew chapter 5, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Now, this, to give you some background to this, Jesus is God made man. He is God in the flesh. And he came for two reasons. One, to reconcile us back to God. He was going to do it by his death on the cross. But before he died on the cross, he was teaching the truths of the kingdom of God to people so that they would know how to relate to, walk with, be in relationship with God. And in his most famous sermon, this sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus goes up on a steep hill, sits down, his disciples gather around him, and he begins to speak to them about how you walk with God in this world. And he starts with eight value statements or eight descriptions of what a person in his kingdom is like in this world. And they're called the Beatitudes. And this is number five. Now, what I find interesting about this is how Jesus talks about merciful. I would have expected him to say, blessed are those who receive mercy. I felt blessed. I felt a peace. I felt a sense of joy when that leader gave mercy to me. I was blessed, and I would think that that's how the Beatitude should go. Blessed are those who receive mercy, but that is not how Jesus puts it. Instead, he says, blessed are the merciful. Blessed are those who show mercy, for they will then be shown mercy. What did he mean by that? Now, fortunately for us, Jesus, this was not a one-time thing that Jesus taught. It comes up in a lot of his teaching, and it came up in a story later on in the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 18, and we read about the story that's initiated by Peter's question. So Matthew 18, 21. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? Now, this is the question that starts the story. And the question by Peter is a question we ask ourselves, and we ask, how many times am I supposed to forgive? How much mercy do I need to share before I don't need to share it anymore? How much can I get? How much do I have to forgive before I stop forgiving a person? Where's the line? And the modern, current religious teaching at that time was you forgive somebody seven times and that's it. And so for that person who betrayed me, that person who stole from me, that person who gossiped about me, God, how many times do I need to forgive him? Seven times and you're out. Now, notice what this question is and is not. Peter is not asking, Lord, do I still trust those who sin against me? He's not asking that question. He's not asking, do I need to keep trusting people who prove they're unreliable and untrustworthy? That's not the question. He's not asking, God, do I keep sharing truths and secrets about myself to somebody who goes out and gossips? That's not the question he's asking. He's asking, if somebody gossips about me and I hear about it and I hear about it again and again and again, how many times am I supposed to forgive this person? Now, Jesus' answer is somewhat cryptic, but is obvious. He said, I tell you, not seven times, but 70 times seven, or 77 times. Jesus isn't saying, oh, you know, count it out to get to 70 times seven times. He's saying you should always be merciful. It should be a character of your life. And then he goes into the story. Therefore, so this should be, mercy should be a character of your life. Therefore, let me tell you this story and help you to understand what I mean by this. The kingdom of heaven is like. So the kingdom of heaven, walking with God, being in the kingdom of God, is like this. It's like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Now, you know the price of gold and how crazy it is. Imagine 10,000 bags of gold. And since he was not able to pay, no kidding, intentionally Jesus exaggerates the price. No one could pay that back. The master ordered, or the king ordered, that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. And at this, the servant fell on his knees before him. "Be patient with me," he begged, "and I will pay back everything." There's the first indication that he is not true. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled in debt, and let him go. Now, the servant chooses an action, borrowing an immense amount of money, that has consequences. Eventually, the king demanded payment for all that he had chosen. And since he could not pay, he could not meet the consequences, or he could not meet the requirements that he had agreed to, there are consequences. And the law at that time said, when somebody owes somebody something else, if they cannot or will not pay it, you take everything they have, all their possessions, including their wife, their children, their servants, you sell them all, and then you throw that person in prison, and they don't get out until they can pay back everything they owe. Well, this man is in trouble because there's no way he's paying back 10,000 bags of gold, and there's nobody that would have that money to pay it for him. And so he begs the king, "Have mercy on me." And the king does. The king cancels the debts against him and lets him go. That is mercy. Now stop for a moment. Generally, when we think about mercy, we often fall into what I would call a pseudo-mercy or a show or a shadow mercy. It's a mercy where we think it means, well, just be easygoing. It's okay, don't worry about the debt. You don't need to pay it. Or we'll act like it never happened. What debt? There was no debt. That's the way we think we're supposed to act when people give us mercy or we give people mercy, like nothing happened. Or I'm supposed to be so easygoing, it shouldn't bother me. But what we forget and what we miss in this story is that there was a debt that had to be paid, and somebody paid it, just not the servant. The king absorbed the debt. The king absorbed the negative consequences. The king took on the cost of the actions of the servant. And by showing mercy, he paid the debt. He took on the debt. And he let him go. Well, when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. Not a bag of gold, not a half a bag of gold, 100 silver coins. And he grabbed him and he began to choke him. "Pay back what you owe me," he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, "Be patient with me and I will pay you back." But he refused. Instead, he went off and he had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. And when the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and they went and told their master everything that had happened. So the roles are reversed. This servant who had a debt he couldn't pay and begged for mercy and was given mercy is now put into a situation where the roles are reversed, and someone who has a debt who owes him, he now responds to him. But instead of responding in mercy, he responds with justice. Now requiring that man to pay the debt was not wrong in and of itself. It was an act of justice. He took on the debt. He was supposed to pay it back. But he asked for mercy, and the man refused mercy. And so the onlookers and the king are upset with him because you would have thought that having received so much mercy, his heart would have been changed and he would give mercy. That one who receives so much mercy would have the heart change and give mercy. And so instead of justice, would be open to giving mercy. Now watch what happens, the consequences of his acts. Then the master called the servant in, and the master is now going to judge him. And the first thing you're going to see about the judgment of the king, or the master, is this, that he judges according to truth. He judges according to the heart of the servant. He said, "You wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me for mercy. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I have had on you?" So the king judges in truth. He judges according to the heart of the servant. So as I said, the servant is given mercy with a debt he cannot repay. He goes out, the tables are reversed, the roles are reversed, and he demands justice. And so he comes at the person that owes him, not with a broken heart, a broken spirit, not with mourning his own failures and humble before God. He comes back proud and hard-hearted and self-righteous. He demands of this person, totally forgetting about the mercy he had received, he demands of this person, "You pay me back. You owe me. You pay me back. I want what's mine." He's demanding his rights. He's demanding that he get paid regardless of the impact on the person he is demanding it from. You can see the pride, the hard-heartedness, the self-righteousness of this man. But Jesus says in the Beatitudes that those that are in the kingdom, those that find entrance into God's kingdom, are those who are poor in spirit, not proud, those who mourn their sin, not demand what's theirs. Those who are humble themselves before God and receive the truth that God says about them and humble themselves before God to take God's path to deal with that. Not demanding of justice. Not demanding their way. And so the king sees through the heart of the servant by his actions. There's another thing about the judgment of the king, that in judgment, he gives the servant exactly what he wants. He says to the servant, "In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owes." That is what the servant wanted. The servant wanted justice because when he had the chance to choose between mercy and justice, he chose justice. And God in his judgment always gives us what we truly want. What we choose in life is what God gives to us. It's not like we live this life choosing what is right and what is good and then we get and stand before God and he turns the table and said, "Ha! I'm going to judge you in a way you never thought possible. You never dreamed. I can't wait to send you to hell." God does not send anybody to hell that does not choose that path. The king is righteous in his judgment. And he gives the servant exactly what the servant asks for. Then Jesus ends his story and says this, "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother and sister from the heart." See, there's an assumption in this whole story, and this is the assumption, that having received mercy, we would be changed in our heart. And then we would follow the path of God, that we would follow the values of God, the way God lives, his nature, that we would become like him and we would act like him, that there would be heart change. You see, that's the whole point of the Beatitudes, that those who belong to the kingdom are those who are poor in spirit, who look at their lives compared to God and say, "I have failed. And what you say of me and my sin, God, is true. And I have no excuse." And they mourn their sin and say, "God, I long for it to be different. I long for me to be different, for me to live different, to act different, to think different. I long for that." And then meek before God, humble, saying, "God, your way, your path is what is right. and I choose it over my own. And then hungering and thirsting after God, saying, in every aspect of my life, from this point on, I am choosing to honor you, to be in right relationship with my money, with my sex, with my words, with my thinking, with how I deal with conflict, with my mercy. I will align my life with you. The assumption of this story is that having received so great a mercy, we would submit ourselves to God and change and be different, new people. That's the point of the gospel. That's the point of the Bible, really. The point is that we are like that servant with a debt we cannot pay. And you think about the sin, the way we disobey God, either doing things we shouldn't do, thinking things we shouldn't think, motivated by motives we shouldn't have, speaking words we shouldn't say, or not doing what we should do, not thinking what we should think, not being motivated by what we should be motivated by. And daily, we sin against God, building a debt of sin that we owe to God, a debt we could never pay. And yet, the greatest act of mercy was that Jesus said, I will give mercy to those who call on me. I will go take their place on the cross and die and pay the debt that they owed so that they can be reconciled and restored in relationship through forgiveness with my Father. And so that each person that goes, that's what I want. I want to be restored with God. I want my debt paid for. I want mercy. I want free from the weight and the heaviness of my soul. For the things I am ashamed of, the things I feel guilty about, the things I know are wrong, I want to be a new person. I've tried to create an identity for myself, to be a person that I could be proud of, be a person that is good in this world, but I keep failing. There's those quiet, hidden places of my life. There's those things I've done, things that I've said, and I don't have any answer for them. And Jesus said, I am your answer. I will be merciful to you. So have you received that mercy? You know, the reception of God's mercy is simple. It's kind of like ABC. A, admit that you're a sinner before God. The first step is to swallow our pride or put our pride aside and humbly come before God and say, yes, I am broken. I am sinful. I have guilt from things that I'm responsible for. To admit that we are sinners. In fact, you can do that right now, right? While you're sitting there on the train or at home or in your car or wherever you're watching this, you can say, God, yeah, I admit to you right now that I'm sinful, I'm a sinner. You may even have things you want to tell him, say, I know, I'm going to confess these things to you. And then you need to believe that the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is able to pay for your sin, that God accepts the payment of Jesus on the cross for your sin and for my sin. And we believe, yes, God, you can say to him, my God, I believe that Jesus' death and resurrection pays for my sin. You can pray that. And then see, choose to surrender your life to God. Say, God, this is your life now. I take all the chips in the poker game of life, and I'm putting them in. They're all yours. My life is yours. Everything about my life, every area of my life, I now submit to you. Help me to walk in that submission. You're the Lord. You're the master. I'm the servant. I'm the follower. Admit, believe, choose. So you can pray that right now. And if God is speaking to you, pray. Receive the mercy. Allow Jesus to pay for your sin and release you from the weight and the guilt of it. But once we become followers of Jesus, we now live. It's not like the unmerciful servant who we get God's mercy. Oh, he's not going to worry, but now I'm going to live like I want. Now I'm going to go be who I want to be. It's a commitment to say, now I follow. I surrender my life to Jesus. Now I'm following you. And now mercy and living out mercy is to be the characteristic of our lifestyle. That's why Jesus said, when Peter asked seven times, Jesus said 70 times seven. He's saying, you ought to always be merciful because I'm merciful and you're following me and you're hungering and thirsting after righteousness. So when you give mercy, you will find mercy because you are being who I called you to be and what I called you to be. that mercy is how you live your life now. So that has some implications for us. It means we have to show mercy to experience mercy. Because if we're not living out the life like the unmerciful servant, then there's something wrong with our hearts. In our lives, the problem with a sermon like this is if I ended it right here, I sound just the same as any other religion or non-religion. I think people in general go, yeah, you need to forgive. I mean, it releases you from that hurt and the pain toward other people that you're carrying around, and you either need to seek forgiveness or you need to forgive. That's a good practice in life. You don't have to be religious to believe that. The problem is, well, what do you do with the sins against you that you have had done against you that radically altered your life? They were so deep, profoundly painful. And what do you do if you're the one who did those sins that profoundly injured another person, took their life, emotionally wrecked them, altered their future, their understanding of themselves? What do you do with that? Now, see, this is where the truth of Jesus' mercy comes in. Because first we take our own sin and we bring it to the cross and we lay it at the feet of Jesus at the cross, and we believe that the death of the infinite eternal Son of God is sufficient payment for my sin and my failure. That his death fully pays for my sin. Now, no matter how heinous it is, that his death is sufficient, and the resurrection proves that it is. Then we take the sins of others against us, no matter how heinous, and we lay them at the foot of Jesus right beside our own sins. And we believe that the death of Jesus is sufficient to deal with the sins against us. And we trust that Jesus will deal righteously and lovingly and truthfully and justly with the sins of others toward us, just like he's going to deal with ours. It's not up to us to deal with the sins of others or even our own sins. It's up to us to give them to Jesus, lay them at his feet, and trust him to deal with them. And then to trust his words, that as we act in mercy, we find mercy. That in giving mercy and being like the Father, Jesus will provide a mercy in our soul that will heal the hurt and the pain and the emptiness and the guilt and those feelings of unworthiness that were filled in us because of our actions or actions done to us. See, the difference between the forgiveness of the world and the forgiveness of Jesus is that he pays for the sins and he heals them when we trust him to deal with them. So today I want to end with two questions. First, about whom has the Spirit of God talked to you today that you should seek mercy from? Who is it that you've sinned about? Don't wait 15 years. Go. Go and have the courage and the humility to say, this is what I have done, this is what I said, this is how I hurt you, would you forgive me? Who's God spoken to you about that you need to go to? Or who has God spoken to you about whom you need to forgive? Who is it that has hurt you, that has injured you, that has deeply affected you, profoundly given you pain? And God is saying, bring their sin to the cross and trust me to heal you and to deal with their sin. Who is it that you need to forgive? Blessed are the merciful, because they shall obtain mercy. Jesus, would you take your words and radically alter our hearts so that we become in submission to you and we live out your nature and your values, that we become merciful people because you have been merciful to us. Change us by your word. Don't let us keep defaulting to our natures that are angry and bitter and proud and fearful, but change us that we might become merciful like King Jesus.